Welcome back to the Pride of Detroit PODcast, PrideofDetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter. You know how to find us, Pride of Detroit on Facebook. You know how to find us. I'm Chris Perfett, the adequate host, at Chris Perfett, P-E-R-F-E-T-T. And on this podcast today, we are going to try to take down people who deserve it or piss people off or whatever it is that people seem to be mad at us this time. But you know what? No, on a serious note, one again, thank Megan Dooley, who joined us in the last podcast. It was a very good podcast, I feel like, about the sexual allegations in Matt Patricia's past. But we're on to moving on to other things. Megan's going to rejoin us, I think, in the future. She's a big college football fan, and I don't think it's fair to just bring her on for the super serious stuff. Want her bring her up to talk about some college football, but that's a ways away. We were going to be talking this episode about some of your favorite stuff, OTAs, UDFAs, other pronunciations, or what's the word? Abbreviations? Yeah, abbreviations.
Acronyms?
Is it acronyms? I thought acronym was... Yes, it is acronyms. Okay. Thank you very much, Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock god. At Ryan underscore POD. Ryan, you've been really helping me out lately. My vocabulary has been going down the pipe. So, thank you. Thank you for being here.
Well, no. Anytime, Chris.
Hashtag the world needs editors.
The world does need editors. I've seen some hellacious stuff without editors. That third voice there is Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader in exile. No at. I cannot give his at right now. He's
at Pride of Detroit.
At Pride of Detroit for the time being. Hey, you want to know why he's not on Twitter? Stick around. We're going to answer it in the mailbag. How's that? That's a long tease.
Nice tease.
Hmm. We got a mailbag question. People did not notice. They noticed, Jeremy. They noticed and they want to know. But you know what? I'm not going to give it to you right off the bat. You're going to have to stick with us this time.
That's the best tease since Tabor.
Oh, nice. Nice. I'm going to have to remember that for the season. On this podcast,
the wheels are coming off.
Again, on this podcast, we're going to talk OTAs next segment, along with some undrafted free agent news. We're also going to be unveiling our first segment, a prototype called Season Rewind, to look back at the 2017 season. We've got enough time before the next one. So each week we're going to be going through a new game until we get bored of it or people hate it. We're going to start with the Cardinals this week. But first, to kick us off, let's start with Golden Tate, who has just come out today that he wants to play for the Detroit Lions. He wants to hope not only to get extended, but he also has told Dave Burkett he wants to retire as a Detroit Lion.
Yeah, good luck with that, buddy. I would love for that to be the case, but with the way he's been drooling over every single wide receiver extension over the past 365 days, I don't see the Lions break the bank for him. I mean, you saw how excited he got when Jarvis Landry signed that 5-year, $75 million contract or whatever it was. Lions aren't going to shell out 5-year, $75 million for a 30-year-old guy, even if he's getting 90 catches a year.
Let's see here. Tate has said, I love where I am now. I love the city of Detroit. I love the fan base. I love our stadium. So I just love to stay here, finish it here. And then hang him up in 5, 6, 7 years, whenever it is, whenever my body tells me I can't play anymore. Ryan, I think he could keep playing for another 5 years, though.
I mean, I think he could, too. I think his style of the game probably suits the idea that he has for longevity in the league pretty well. Couple of things, though. One, what Golden Tate is saying right there is everything that he needs to say to maintain leverage in a situation where it's team versus player. I mean, he checked off all the boxes on all the things that anybody should ever say to keep himself endeared to a fan base. What is he going to say? I'm going to explore my options. We're a long ways away from that talk even becoming a thing. So,
right.
And I think to Jeremy's point about Jarvis Landry, I think we keep on comparing the money that Landry got to what Tate might get. With that being said, and you've acknowledged this even before as well, Jeremy, but the age difference between the two players, I think has something to do with what Tate can potentially get. I mean, it is the open market. So, I mean, I guess anybody could overpay for him. But I don't know if he's going to get a contract similar to Landry's. I mean, similar, yes, but like not, I can't see somebody paying that much money for a 30-year-old wide receiver.
Well, do you think they're going to give him an extension? Like, I mean, it sounds like we know nothing about the talks right now between Tate and the Lions. You know, he is an unrestricted free agent in 2019. So after this season, so I am curious, where those talks are right now, if we are in extension or if he would indeed test the market, or, you know, what the qualifiers would be. Right now, base salary about, what is it, 70 million, about, I mean, 7 million, 9.3 million cap hit. So, I mean, he's definitely going to want to upgrade for that. He's proved his worth to this offense, though.
He has, and the Lions offense would look drastically different without him. And the question is, are they prepared for a major shakeup? Like, obviously, we've talked over the last few weeks about how the running game is probably going to be more incorporated in the offense. It's not going to be its identity, but they're certainly striving to become more balanced, or at least more efficient when they do decide to run the ball. But yeah, what is the future of this offense? Is Kenny Galladay going to be the number one? And now they're going back to like a Calvin Johnson type bomb it out all the time offense and just rely on your deep wide receivers. Are they going to get some tight end options that are going to be signed long-term to hit up the seam? Are they going to stick with maybe more of a West Coast offense with short passes and screens, just with a different person like a Jace Billingsley or someone else that comes up the ranks? I don't know. But right now, I don't think they have a Golden Tate on the roster. So losing him would obviously force some sort of huge, I think, schematic change. And I don't know if the Lions are prepared to do that.
Do you think even Matt Stafford's prepared to do that? It seems like he's finally found his groove with this new offensive structure from Jim Bob Cooter. It just kind of seemed like a shame to have to keep fixing it up and changing it yet again. That was kind of one of the big things that, if I remember, Stafford didn't want to deal with. He didn't want to deal with another offensive scheme kind of being shaken up.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's one of the things he was one of the few people to throw his support behind Jim Bob Cooter when the whole coaching shift was going out. Not that people weren't supporting him, but Stafford's usually a pretty reserved guy and doesn't like to say things like that in the public just because they make headlines. And so when you say something like, yeah, I want Jim Bob Cooter back, it makes waves, and it's not something that Stafford likes to do. So he must really mean it.
Yeah. One more thing from me here real quick that, I mean, you mentioned Jeremy checking off. I'm sorry, Ryan, you mentioned there, that's everything he had to say in his talk with Dave Burkett. But here's the thing. This is what he said in Seattle right before he left. I probably shouldn't even say this right now, but I'm going to say it anyway, just because I love Seattle. Honestly, I'd rather take a little less to be happy and win ball games than to take way more and go to a crappy city where the fans don't give a crap about the team. You win a game once a month or something like that. I'd much rather stay in the situation that I have now for a little less than to go and try to break the bank somewhere else. Which is funny because he didn't really break the bank with Detroit, but I'm sure at the time a lot of people would point to that kind of cognitive dissonance about signing with a team like the Detroit Lions, who are not bad, but historically might qualify for that.
Right. Yeah. So talk is cheap, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Especially when you consider what, you know, Nate Burleson had to say, you know, so long ago about how, you know, players had said, players go to Detroit to see their careers die, essentially. So, but yeah, like the bigger point, I think, is the idea that talk, it's lip service and talk is cheap. Contracts aren't.
Well, here's one thing.
Sorry, I was muted there. I was just going to throw in real quick and then you can do Jeremy. I was about to say, meanwhile, fast forward to 2018 and Nate Burleson's out in Dallas with the Beverly Hills Cop Detroit Lions jacket announcing the pick. Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, Nate Burleson wasn't the one saying Detroit's where people's players or players' career go to die. He said a player had told him that, which, that's what he said. Anyways,
yeah.
The point I wanted to bring up is maybe Golden Tate was sticking by, maybe he was being truthful in his words in Seattle. Maybe Seattle didn't have a lot of interest in bringing him back. I think that's probably at least a little bit true. This whole thing started with Golden Tate and his obsession with getting an extension. It didn't start this offseason. He started talking about it last offseason. And interestingly enough, the first time he really went public with his interest in getting an extension done in Detroit was after Julian Edelman's contract last year. And I don't know if you guys remember, Julian Edelman only got a 2-year, $11 million extension with the Patriots. A very, very, very cheap contract. So the question becomes, would Golden Tate do something like that with the Lions to stay there? Obviously, the Lions don't have anywhere near the pedigree the Patriots do, and the Patriots tend to work out these crazy deals just because they're so good and so reliable and, you know, bring in championship runs every single year. But if Golden Tate, what he said in Seattle is true, you know, he'd rather take a little hometown discount for a team that, or a city that clearly cares about his team, a team that he believes in the direction they're going. By all means, Golden Tate has not been distraught in Detroit, except for maybe that one, was it 2016, where he started off a little slow and people were wondering if he was down on the team. This guy's getting 90 catches and 1,000 yards every year. There's no reason for him to be distraught or unhappy here in Detroit other than maybe not winning games. So would he take a very modest short-term deal just to stay in Detroit? I don't think so, but if he looked at Julian Edelman's contract and said something like, you know, I don't mind that. Like, am I next? Can I get some of this?
I'm wondering if you could structure it to be kind of fairly, kind of like some of these quarterback contracts, and front load it, get him the money he needs to. Because I think what he needs at this point is just security, a knowledge that he will play for a place for so many years. And I can totally understand, like, you have now, the clock is now ticking on whether or not you're going to stay in Detroit, whether or not you're going to have to sell whatever property you might have in Detroit, or at least put it up just in case you get an offer somewhere else. Like, there's something there off the field and away from any talk of play or money that comes with the security of knowing where you are. And so when you're in that, when you're in that phase where it's like, okay, I've got a year and a half left on my contract, I think some guys do start kind of thinking about what's going to happen next a little bit more. And I think, again, if it really depends on what Tate's looking for. If he's looking to stay with Detroit, I think there's a way to work that out. If he's looking for money, there's definitely a way to work it out. Just might not help qualify him for some of those later phases. And if it's a matter of like longevity, I think that's probably the best way to go about it. You can, you know, get him the money he wants, get him the guaranteed up front. And then as long as his body can continue to play, like he says, then he can just keep earning until he or the team feels he's done.
At his age, and I think this is pretty much what you're alluding to, Chris, when it comes to security, I think a player who's entering his 30s, I mean, the NFL is such a youth-driven league, but by the time you're hitting 30, you're thinking, this is my last contract.
Yes.
Like, this is this is the last contract that I can get that can be like a big grab that can, like, I can get like legitimate, like I can get like 3 years, some big guaranteed money. Like, this is my last chance, especially for a guy of Tate's caliber. Like, I think that's the notion. And I mean, because of the skill position, I think you see a lot of turnover at skill position too. So, I mean,
more than any other thing. Youth driven. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and I think the situation in Seattle was a little bit different too, because they were so concerned with keeping their defense intact. And I mean, look how that ended up turning out. But like, I mean, they had to give so much money to defensive players that, you know, Tate and the offense, and look at the shambles that their offensive line has been in over the past couple of seasons. But with Tate, I want to see him back. It's all just going to be about the price.
Well, let's talk about that for a second. Let's talk about this from the Lions' point of view, because I think I threw out this question to our readers a month or two ago. You know, what's the maximum you would pay for Golden Tate if you were the Detroit Lions and you're trying to build this team for the future? I think the number I threw out was something like 3 years, $30 million. Is that too much from the Lions' point of view, or is that workable in your opinion?
Well, I think my question is like, That would be more than Marvin Jones then, right?
On an average per year basis, I think so, yeah. For sure.
So I guess the question is like, yeah, is Tate more important to this offense than Marvin Jones? And I mean, in some past years, you could say absolutely. Marvin Jones did play very well in 2017. So it really depends. I'm seeing that there is a potential out on Jones's contract in 2019, but I would say for my own question, yes, I think Golden Tate's more important to this offense right now than Marvin Jones.
The Lions have really struggled with free agents in their past too, but like Jones and Tate especially have been huge, huge bargains. They've like way outperformed. Yeah. They've way overperformed what their contracts have been.
People thought they overpaid for Marvin Jones too. Like,
oh, yeah. people thought they overpaid for Golden Tate.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, you look at Tate's numbers in Seattle, they were nothing to line up with the type of money that he got. But look at the way that, you know, he's turned into a really special breed of receiver, like the Julian Edelmans and the Wes Welkers before him. And he's arguably done it even better than they have.
I say yes. No, I agree with you on that. I think he has.
And I think other key to this entire equation, and it's why I put the 3-year figure on Golden Tate's extension, is they still have Kenny Galladay on that rookie contract for another 4 years. And so they'll have a little wiggle room there at wide receiver in terms of cap space, in my opinion, if that's how they want to look at it. You know, you got Kenny Galladay on a keep contract. You got Marvin Jones at a pretty good discount. Maybe you can afford to splurge a little bit on Golden Tate.
I think so. That's a pretty good core receiving core for the future.
First, Jeremy, I agree with you. I think that like 3 years, $30 million, like if that's the going rate, I think that'd be something that the Lions would definitely be interested in. I think they should be interested in it. However, let me float this out to you guys as kind of like my last idea. Do you feel like Tate and Riddick, do you feel like those situations will be tied together? Because I could definitely see the offense and Quinn going in either one or the other direction. I know they don't play the same position, but I feel like their contract and the amount of shells that they're dedicating to the skill positions, I feel like those might be like inextricably like tied to one another in a way.
I kind of see what you're saying, but I like with all of the things that are getting shaken up at running back right now, I don't see the Lions committed to Theo Riddick long-term at this point, even though he brings kind of such a unique style to the team.
Yeah. His dead cap hit in 2019 is like less than $1 million. And then he's unrestricted in 2020 for Theo Riddick. So I guess
my thing is that if they want to commit a lot of money to Tate, it kind of goes back to like your point, Jeremy, about Kenny Galladay, but from like the Kerryon Johnson perspective, like if that's your guy and you have him, and I think that the Lions can just move forward with, you know, signing another power back like Blunt. Maybe Blunt comes back on another 1 year deal or something like that. But you can clear up a lot of money from like the running back position where you're paying next to nothing for, you know, everybody.
Right.
And free up some money for Golden Tate that way if you want to do it that way.
Sure.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a break here. When we come back, we're going to talk about undrafted free agents. Jeremy has wanted to do this for a very long time. I'm finally going to let him do it. And we're going to talk about OTAs. They're coming up. We're going to tell you what to look for in the first organized team activities. That's what it stands for, folks. That's what it means. We'll be right back. PODcast, what does POD stand for? Right in Detroit, you know what it is. Let's talk about undrafted free agents. This has been something I keep going back and forth with Jeremy on, in that I have zero, zero, zero interest in anything this brings to the table. Anything whatsoever.
Every week, though, our mailbag is filled with UDFA questions and like, we're going to get to them next week, I promise. And then something big happens and I'm like, all right, sorry, guys. Didn't have time to do my research on them. We'll get to them next week. I've done a little bit of research on them now. I don't want to do too much research on them because which I think is your major gripe with UDFAs, Chris, is it's all hype, right? We get all excited about these guys who never got drafted for a reason. They're you know, we finally get guys that like position to like, maybe there's a defensive end out of this UDFA class that's finally going to break out and do something. And we get teased every year, right? Like we get Zach Zenners, we get, I don't know.
Yo, who was the guy? I actually think he was a draft pick, but who was the guy that Alex Reno was like really excited about? Jay Lee, not drafted. Not drafted. Yeah. My main, that's about 40% of where I am. Mostly though, 60% is that I don't know if these guys are going to make the roster.
That's what I'm saying. Most of them won't.
It's like as we are talking, a UDFA is getting cut right now. I don't want to spend energy on a lot of guys who I'm not even sure are going to be here for longer than a cup of coffee.
Right. And that's why I don't ever really go too deep into these guys. I'll read a couple profiles on each of these guys and then be like, all right, at least I know a little basic on them in case they crack the roster. But we fall in love with the Jace Billingsleys of the world. But it ultimately, even a guy like Jace Billingsley, who has managed to stick around the league for a couple of years, I don't think he has a career NFL catch yet, but he's barely, you know.
No, just preseason, yeah.
He's made practice squads, but even practice squad guys, like, they rarely see the field, so.
Well, we did have some guys to watch from rookie minicamp, and unfortunately, none of us were allowed to see anything from rookie minicamp, so we're just going to have to go and fly here. Did you want to start with a guy? Because I've actually done some homework, and I actually have a couple of names I want to talk about. So, okay. Yeah, I mean, do you want to start? Fine. Let's start with, since we were just talking about tight ends and what the hell is going to happen there, what about DeAndre Goolsbee out of Florida?
Yeah, I think his name stuck out to me mostly because of the money they gave him. That's one thing to always look for in these UDFA contracts, is not only how much, I mean, look at the money that they give him, because it shows you two things. It shows you, one, the interest that the Lions had in him, and two, possibly the interest that other teams had in him. They obviously there's a high demand for one of these guys. You got to offer them more money. That way you get them. And if you're offering them more money, clearly you have some sort of interest in them. And I don't know. Goolsbee, he's a Florida guy, which is always interesting because the Lions love themselves some Florida guys.
Even more interesting because Florida's been a bit of a wreck offensively for a minute now, too.
That is also true. So if you look at his highlight reel, it's pretty impressive. He's a big guy with really, really good hands, which is something the Lions obviously have wanted out of a tight end for a long time. And you look at the tight end position as it stands, they basically only have one long-term guy in Michael Roberts and no one else. A bunch of guys on one-year deals or guys that probably aren't going to make the team. So Goolsbee, I think he's got a shot to stick around on the practice squad. I don't think he's a guy that you're going to see play significantly in any sort of way this year. He's also a guy that might not end up making the team at all, but he's definitely a guy that I think is a really good candidate to stick around on the practice squad. I wouldn't say a lock to be on the practice squad, but he's a leading contender at this point.
All right. Well, I threw out one. So either Jeremy or Ryan, if one of you guys have a undrafted free agent you want to talk about next, go on right ahead.
You got one, Ryan, or you want me to jump on this?
I can do something that'll make Chris happy. What about Anthony Sherrills? Oh, wait.
What?
So he was a safety that the Lions had given a small little contract to from Missouri, and he's no longer with the team.
Oh, yeah. Well, already. There we go.
I'm going to talk about a guy who didn't make the original rookie minicamp team as a signee. He actually went as a tryout. And as most of you probably know, the Lions actually signed three tryout players from minicamp and signed them to UDFA deals. And that one guy is one that I'm still kind of doing more research on, but he's very intriguing. And that's Deontez Alexander, the wide receiver out of Franklin College.
And yeah, that's a place.
My favorite part of the story is that from Tom Pelissero of NFL.com, he says he had no real game tape online, but the Lions saw clips of him online and invited him to a tryout.
And guys got to get their own tape.
Exactly. And he made the team. Now he's part of the 90 man roster at this point. Dude is blazing fast. 4.36 40 yard dash. He's got an RAS off the charts. If you're into RAS, 9.7, I think is what it is. His highlight reel is also very fun. Kick returning duties, punt returning duties. If you're looking for someone who could potentially, if all the stars align and the Lions have somehow found this, you know, diamond in the rough, could potentially fill a Golden Tate role. He's very, very far away from that, though. Obviously, he's going to be very raw coming from such a small school. I think he has like 2,000 people total or something crazy like that. But he's definitely a guy that I'm going to be keeping an eye on. Just, I mean, he's going to be one of those guys, I think, those early receivers where everyone just like falls in love. Like your Jay Lees, where people are like, oh, man, this guy is exciting. Look at him, all of his measurables. Look at all his ridiculous stats he put up at Franklin College. If he can put it together, which is always the question, if these small school guys can put it together, then, oh, boy, maybe we found ourselves a real star in the making.
Well, who do you think's more likely of this undrafted free agent wide receiver class? I don't want to stick with just wide receivers. I got one more for you to talk about before we get on to OTAs. But who's more likely of the undrafted free agents to make this roster, him or T.O. Redding from Bowling Green?
Yeah, a lot of people are excited about him. I don't quite see it as much. He's a Michigan native, so I think maybe there might be some
Bowling Green's right over the border too. Yeah.
Yeah. There might be some homerism in there or some, you know, everyone likes the hometown hero story. I think that's what makes Luke Wilson signing so exciting to some people, but I don't know. I think T.O. Redding, I don't know. I don't think he makes a team. Could be one of those guys that hangs around the practice squad for a while, but I'm not all in on T.O. Redding at all.
Fair enough. One last guy before we get, and then we got to move on to OTAs. You were talking about high RAS scores. Let me give you a 9.73 for cornerback Mike Ford out of Southeast Missouri State.
That's also an interesting one because if I'm not mistaken, he also got quite a bit of money by the Lions, and he paired with Chad Meredith. Both Southeast Missouri guys. I think both those guys have a really good chance to make the roster. Mike Ford's biggest issue is really just the competition there at cornerback, right? The Lions.
Yeah, it's deep for us right now.
It's very deep. And Matt Patricia loves himself some defensive backs, so there's a chance he'll stick around. But in terms of a numbers game, I don't see how Mike Ford makes the final 53, but he's an exciting prospect to have. Small school guys.
Do you think you make practice squad?
Absolutely. The trick with guys like that is always just like, will he make it? Will another team try to swipe him up? Will a team that doesn't have a lot of cornerback or youth cornerback try to swap him up when the Lions eventually have to waive him before they can put him on the practice squad? I don't know. I think maybe Chad Meredith has a better chance of making the squad as in terms of people from Southeast Missouri. The other linebacker who I think might also have a pretty good shot is Al-Rashid Benton from West Virginia. Guy had a ton of production in 2 years as the starting middle linebacker. The Lions don't really have a ton of inside linebacker depth right now, so he's a guy that I'm also keeping an eye out for and think might be able to squeeze onto the roster if he can provide some special teams value as well.
All right. I promise we get on to OTAs, and we've got about, I would say, 6-7 minutes left in the segment. So let's get on around there. What can we expect to hear from OTAs? What are you looking for the most on OTAs, Ryan?
I think initially my first inclination was to jump and say like Kerryon Johnson, like I'm excited to hear anything about him. But at the same time, I'm really curious to hear about what's going on with Ragnow. Is it guard? Is it center? I feel like that's the $1 million question this offseason until that gets answered for sure. Not sure if it'll be answered at rookie minicamp, but I don't know. Kerryon Johnson, though. Like, I think that's like this. That's obviously a big storyline. But I'm just interested to hear about like what the coaches had to say about him, and maybe some of the other players too.
Yeah, I think I'm with your other point with Ragnow. I'm really interested in kind of a lot of where all these Lions draft picks are going to fit in, because it's not clear for a couple of them, right? Like obviously Kerryon Johnson, we know what's going to happen with Ragnow. even at rookie minicamp, he was kind of center and guard mixture. But we've seen with the Lions in the past 2 years with Jared Davis and Taylor Decker, like once OTA started, they were in a position and they were staying there. So I think we're going to learn a lot about what the Lions' intentions are with Frank Ragnow in these upcoming weeks, provided that they let the media in. But then, I mean, Tracy Walker, right? Like the most confusing pick of the entire draft. What is he going to be? They list him as a defensive back. Is he going to be a safety? Is he going to be a corner, outside corner, inside corner? I mean, we've looked at the tape, and Alex Reno isn't too excited about him being an outside corner. Is it possible he's going to be a safety? Is he going to be what they hoped Miles Killebrew was going to be? Is Miles Killebrew in the equation? Is Miles Killebrew going to turn to linebacker? To me, I just want to know where these guys are playing, especially on defense, because Matt Patricia, new scheme. We don't know who's playing where.
We don't even know if there's a base yet. We don't even know if it's going to be a base 3-4 or 4-3.
There won't be a base, but like even a pickup like Kennard, like we saw him in with the Giants play defensive tackle, defensive end, linebacker, outside linebacker, inside linebacker. I have no idea where they're going to place him. And I'm just excited to see where he fits in, where these rookies fit in. Even Tyrell Crosby, like the fifth round pick, is he going to be a tackle? Is he going to be a guard? I don't know. I just want to see some formation information, and hopefully the Lions are going to be at least a little bit forthcoming with that, even though I don't expect them to be transparent at all over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, like I don't know what to really make of this fact that it's just like the wagons have circled and just once again, no one can get in. State secret. It's like Area 51 out here around Allen Park. No one can see what's happening. The spies might get in.
I don't mind it from a strategic standpoint. I don't think it adds.
There's no strategic standpoint. There's nothing.
There probably is a little bit. But
people are fucking paranoid.
I'd rather them be paranoid than overly open.
Oh my God.
The only thing that sucks is from a media standpoint, right? Like we have less to talk about. From a fan standpoint, too, it sucks because we're just left to wonder in week one what the hell we're going to see out there. But in terms of me wanting the team to succeed, this doesn't like I'm fine with it.
This has zero impact on the team succeeding. Zero. I say that confidently here. That's my hot take. All this damn secrecy, it doesn't stop a damn thing. There. That's my take.
I can't prove you otherwise, but I don't agree.
So this is where we're kind of left, though, right? Like from everything you just said, Jeremy, like from a fan's perspective, from the media's perspective, now it's all just like conjecture. Like we don't even know that's in and of itself is what fans can feed off of, like the uncertainty, the not knowing. That's what keeps the conversation going. So I don't. Maybe part of that is even by design. Like it's a good way to keep people talking about stuff because they don't know.
Yeah, that's an interesting spin on it. I think there's some validity to that, maybe. I'm trying to think what else is really exciting me about OTAs. I mean, just any sort of coverage, I guess, to see, just to kind of get back in the swing of things, because obviously the Matt Patricia stuff kind of derailed everything, and whether rightfully or wrongfully so, that go back and listen to last week's episode. But I'm just excited to kind of be excited about the Lions again. Seeing them out there, having some sort of coverage on them that has some sort of validity to it, not just conjecture, you know, I don't know. I'm just excited to see them out there. They're obviously still not going to be in pads yet, but they're going to be doing team drills for the first time, which means we'll have some sort of idea of what this team is going to look like. And that's always at least a little bit exciting, especially with a brand new coaching staff.
They're not playing real football. Not interested.
Well, then you don't have to be on the podcast then.
Yes, I do. What are you talking about?
It's always fun, though, to like groom through those like 90 second clips that the Lions like Twitter or their Facebook or their website will put out where it's like, oh, like Ragnow's clearly shooting out of a stance and he's playing guard. He's playing guard in this clip. Or
you think people who go over those things and GIF it and like go over every small like pixel of it, do you ever think that it's like they're looking at it kind of like the Zapruder film? Do they ever just realize like what are we doing here?
Ragnow's stance went back and to the left.
Back and to the left.
For some of us, Chris, it's our job and we have to do things like that.
I mean, it's my job here too, to run this podcast. I'm just saying, like, hey, this is probably because there's just nothing else to talk about. And I put in the research. There's just nothing else to talk about in Detroit sports right now. Someone did ask us, why do we only cover the Lions if we're Pride of Detroit? And I have no good answer to that. Other than that, the rest of SB Nation exists. But I will tell you this right now. You don't want to be going to Bless You Boys right now. It's a very sad place.
They're in second place, aren't they?
Oh. Yeah, they are.
Congratulations. Second place in May.
Because the Indians can't get out of their own way.
Oh, wow. I've seen that script before.
Do you guys think that the Lions are going to keep Baudin? Do you think they're going to have a fullback position?
Nah, I don't. We're going to have to. I think next podcast, we're going to try to do some 53-man predictions, because this is going to be a rough one to cut down, because even just as we were sitting here talking, we're talking about, well, maybe they'll carry some extra cornerbacks because it's a pretty deep group they have here. What are we going to do with all the wide receivers? And I don't know. I'm looking at it and my first inclination to say, okay, yeah, they'll cut up the fullback, because that's kind of a position that no longer really exists in the NFL. Like, you've seen some great experimentation with it recently, especially in college with that. Who was it a couple of years ago? I forget his name, but he was out of Northwestern and he was like a super back. He was kind of like a cross between a fullback and a tight end. But I don't see any role for it. But at the same time, I mean, history has shown us that both the Lions and the Patriots seem to really enjoy having a fullback around.
I don't think there's a question that they're going to use a fullback more often. I mean, they arguably had one last year with Ballore, but the question is, are they going to use it enough to devote an entire player to it? You know, I mean, obviously the Lions had a fullback and a pretty good one for 2 or 3 years, but then they just phased it out completely and they didn't need it. They could use a linebacker in that role because they only used it, what, three times a game or so. I think you're going to see them use it probably closer to 5 to 10. And the question is, does that constitute using a roster spot on it? And I don't know. I don't think so at this point, but we'll see.
I don't want to jump too far ahead. Like, you know, Chris mentioned about positional predictions, but like, I think I kind of just view it as last year, the Lions had 5 running backs. Maybe they go with 4 and a fullback this year.
Probably. I don't think that's a smart idea, but we'll see.
Let's take a break here and we're going to try this game rewind idea. So let's take a break. We'll be right back. And then we're going to step back in the Wayback Machine, get back to last September and talk about the Cardinals. And what have we learned from that game? Where does that game fall in the Lions canon? And what can we glean about it moving forward into this year? Stick around. We'll be right back. Pride of Detroit, PODcast. We're stepping in the Wayback Machine. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. And we are taking you back to when? September 10th, 2017. First game of the 2017 season. This is our rewind segment. Because, as we have been proving in the last few segments, at least in my eyes, a lot of the time in the offseason, we spend nattering about what's going to happen when we have no knowledge of actual anything about it. And instead, we might be able to glean some stuff looking back on what the Lions were doing the previous year. Yes, you might say, but there's a new coach. You know what I say? Don't matter, none.
None.
Don't matter, none, none. No, I think there is some good narratives to be found looking back on it, because, I mean, in this industry, we have to make snap judgments after every game, and then we forget about the very next game. And I could go back, and probably next week when I have more time to do production, I'll go back and pull some quotes from our game the second week there. Against who? I don't remember. Don't have the schedule up in front of me now. Too many tabs. Giants? Yes. Pull up some of that about the Giants. But we don't have that for the Cardinals here. But we are going to talk about the Cardinals. This was exciting for us because I believe for Pride of Detroit, we were pulling up what was it, Ryan? First year we were credentialed and you were there. You were there in the press box.
I was there. I had 3 ice cream sandwiches. It was a long game.
It's a good memory to have. And it was a long game. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a very long game. It was, I am going to go on the record here. And because now we have the benefit of hindsight and we have the entire season to take in as a whole, this was the craziest game of the season.
What? New
Orleans was a stupid game. That game was stupid. Okay. This was the craziest game because holy moly, like if you could have scripted any game to go exactly opposite, like from the start, Matthew Stafford's first throw after becoming the highest paid quarterback in the NFL's history was a pick six.
Yep, touchdown, Justin Bethel, pick 82 yards on an interception return.
And I just remember all of like the national media, like, oh, this is what you paid for Lions? Good job with that.
Yeah. So
and
that,
of course,
that
he finishes the game with 4 touchdowns, the most I think he probably threw all season.
Yeah, it's got to be up there. Yeah,
which is funny enough to think about that he throws 4 touchdowns in this game, considering that I believe the first touchdown by the Lions didn't come until like what, halfway into the second quarter as well. After that interception, there was like two punts and 1 turnover on downs.
I don't think that the Lions didn't get a first down until like 14 minutes into the game.
Yeah.
Well, to me, like
go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, to me, this was just a huge continuation of the 2016 season, right?
Comeback, yeah, it was very stop and start. Quarter,
slow start, no running game. Matthew Stafford balls out in the fourth quarter and the Lions win. Like, but this is just like, oh, okay, I guess the 2017 season is just going to be more of the same.
And how wrong were we about that? Because the 2017 season wasn't like 2016 at all, especially when it came to a lot of these come from behind things.
2016 will probably go down as one of my favorite seasons.
It's one of my favorites. It absolutely is. I mean, more than the 2014 or one of those seasons where we actually like stood a chance getting into the playoffs. That 2016 was just fun.
Yeah, it was a very fun season. A lot of people were down because they wanted things to happen to Caldwell, and I know we're getting totally off topic, but like 2016 was just a lot of fun from the standpoint of like, dude, at the end of the game, like the Lions always have a chance to win. And that was at least like a good feeling. And I mean, to say that a 9-7 season is one of my favorite Lions seasons ever is kind of wild. But yeah, so I mean, it seemed like 2016 was bleeding into 2017, and it seemed like it was just going to be madness again.
And it's funny enough you mention, you know, people being down on Caldwell, because it looked like, you know, again, after the miracle job in 2016, that Caldwell was going to be secure, at least probably through another year or two.
Yeah, they had just talked about his extension right before the season started, right?
Yeah.
But he had been given an extension, and it's just like, okay, well, I guess we're just in for this wacky, edge-of-your-seat football for, I don't know, the end of time with the Detroit Lions, because they can't start quickly for whatever reason. They can't run the ball, so whenever they do get an early lead, they're never able to maintain it. And we've got Matthew Stafford just slinging it in fourth quarters, and this is, I mean, it's fun football to watch, and this was a really fun game to watch in the fourth quarter. The first 3 quarters were pretty ugly, though.
Brutal. Absolutely brutal. This was the Casey Redfern game.
Yep. Oh, God, that's right!
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
Right. he had the largest yards per carry of any running back. Or no. He had the longest run of the day. He had the longest run of the day.
And let's talk about our perception of the Cardinals at the time and now looking back on them now, because I think this should be a key part of our review system. Is like, okay, well, we beat the Cardinals then. We thought they were really, really bad, or we thought they were really, really good. So we thought it was a good win, but it was actually a shitty win or whatever.
Yeah. And I think that and the Lions, I think we've covered our base on what we thought the Lions would be. Right. Now let's talk about what we thought the Cardinals would be.
Right. And they were coming off of a 7-8-1 season in 2016. So I think the thought was, you know, this is still a really, really good defense. They got David Johnson, who obviously left the game injured about halfway through. Carson Palmer? Is he done? Is he got one or two more years in him? I think the whole NFC West was up for grabs in our minds. And I think most people thought it was going to be between the Cardinals and the Seahawks. Obviously no one saw the Rams coming. And so I think I came away with this game thinking it was a pretty good win, especially considering how well the offense performed in general after a slow start against what was perceived as a pretty good Cardinals defense. And actually, if you go look back on DVOA numbers from the 2017 season, this was still a really good defense. It was number four in DVOA in 2017. So looking back, I think our perception, at least my perception of the game, actually kind of measured reality in a way. Lions offense was pretty good against a good defense, and that should be commended. I think maybe one of the biggest surprises, and we didn't even talk about it from the Lions standpoint, were the turnovers created. Three interceptions in this game. Lions, I think, only had 10 interceptions all of 2016. So we didn't know it at the time, but apparently that was a sign of things to come. The Lions defense just being a turnover machine in 2017.
Yeah. We did not expect, I think, that. I mean, we had one interception touchdown, and then I think two additional interceptions on top of that. Like, I don't think we were. And I believe a fumble recovery.
Yeah, Jared Davis. Scooped it up when A'shaun Robinson forced a fumble.
Jeremy, you mentioned kind of measured there, and part of this is also to try to go back through old receipts. So I've got a Tuesday open thread from September 12th. You saying, the Lions may be 1-0, but they're far from perfect. And you called the most disappointing Lions performance against the Cardinals on Sunday Amir Abdullah. And I think that was a nice portent of things to come, because I think, again, if there was a season, we just talked about this during the draft, if there was a season to put Amir Abdullah's future with his team in doubt, it was, this constant waiting for Godot and Amir Abdullah, just nothing really exciting about him in the opener.
Yeah. And actually this conversation is going to get really exciting next week when you talk about his performance against the Giants, because that's when I fractured the Lions fan base with my take on what happened then. But 15 rushes for 30 yards in this game. His longest run was 7 yards. If there were signs that the Lions running game was going to struggle in 2017, we saw them right away.
Yeah.
Well, I think the other thing too, though, is maybe we told ourselves, you know what, the Cardinals defense is kind of good.
Yeah.
So maybe we were like, you know what, they played against a tough, and that was the thing, I think, even to open the season, like even like the Giants game the next week, where it was like, all right, they're going up against a stiff defense. I don't know if they're going to be able to, quote unquote, establish the running game. But I thought going into this game that, and then even leaving it, I thought, you know what, the Cardinals were probably playoff contenders. Losing David Johnson, they put him on IR after this. It was one of those things where it was like, maybe now they might not be playoff contenders. I want to talk real quick about my favorite drive from this game. There was a drive in which Alex Barrett, the defensive end, lined up at fullback. Mm-hmm. Dwayne Washington ran for a first down. Stafford threw a touchdown to Marvin Jones for the first score of the season. And then Jake Rudock, who had to take over place kick holding duties for for Casey Redfern, bobbled it and then picked it up and ran to the sideline.
His first career NFL play.
That's welcome to the NFL, kid, right there. I want to talk about a couple more players from this too, about what we thought at the time. Golden Tate, 10 receptions for 107 yards. It just looked like more stellar out of Golden Tate. And he ended the season with over 1,000 yards, but I don't think, like, Marvin Jones, by contrast, really struggled in this game. He had two very long catches for 37 yards, but we thought Golden Tate would be the one in far more use through the season.
Yeah, I think this is kind of the beginning of the narrative that, like, maybe Marvin Jones was a mistake. Because I remember this being a thing, and myself included in it, where, like, wow, Marvin Jones is not picking up his end of the bargain. And if you look at his, if you look at his contract, like, we might not be able to get out of this until after 2019. And, you know, I was seriously considering things like that. Like, man, he's not pulling his weight. But if you listen to Jim Bob Cooter at the time, he's like, you know, this is going to change week by week. Like, sometimes Golden Tate's going to get 10 looks. Sometimes Marvin Jones is going to get 10 looks. It's going to change week by week. And of course we probably should have listened to him, but like you said, we're in a media where it's all about instantaneous reactions. And you see a number one receiver arguably getting two catches in a game. Granted, one of them was a touchdown. You're concerned.
Yeah. And granted, again, he had average on each of those, like, close to like 20 yards when he averaged. I don't know how each one was. I think he had a long for like 31. So actually, I don't even know what I'm saying. The two other guys, this was Ryan, did you have something before I go on to my last point?
Oh, I might even say your last point before you say it. So I'll say it right now and steal your thunder. Speaking of stealing thunder, this was like the Kenny Golladay coming out party.
Yes, I was going to say rookies. So I've got someone else on top of it. But let's start with Golladay.
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing about Golden Tate's 10 catches for 107 yards is that it was like the most like overwhelmed performance, because like it kind of just flew under the radar. It was like, oh, yeah, you know, Tate had 10 catches for 107 yards. Nowhere near it paled in comparison to what Golladay did that day. Like, people's expectations for Golladay's shot through the roof after this game. Like, people were like, I think you go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. We're lagging here. My apologies, folks. Four receptions, two touchdowns. The most important stat,
nice.
Ryan, you react to it. 69 yards.
Nice.
Jeremy, damn it. Go on, Ryan. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. But the thing about Galladay's day, though, no pun intended, but like, it started off rough. He dropped a pass in the end zone.
Yep.
People were really down on him. And then the second half, he comes out and just, it's like, he explodes for that huge catch. It was like the 45 yard bomb where he had to dive out. And the diving catch was incredible.
Still the background of my iPad, that diving catch.
Yeah, I mean, it was impressive. And even the touchdown that he scored in the red zone when he had to jump up and grab that ball in the back corner. Like, it was, it was impressive stuff. Like, I mean, I think it was one of those performances where it kind of fed into the narrative that Jeremy was talking about earlier. It was like, I mean, if we got Kenny Golladay, what the hell do we need Marvin Jones for?
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. The other one I was going to say, so this was a game of about, I think, two rookies, kind of Kenny Golladay in the offense. But then we thought Jared Davis, I think he had like nine tackles on the day, but he looked strong at the linebacker position. He looked like someone you could really depend on, even coming out of a rookie year where we thought, you know, maybe he might come out a bit slow. And instead, he really balled out in this game, Jeremy.
Yeah, and I think maybe one of the early takes on the season was maybe this run defense has finally turned it around. Obviously, David Johnson left this game early, and it may have been a different game if he had stayed in, but David Johnson only had 11 carries for 23 yards in this game. So it's not like he was changing the game while he was in there. And that's what Jared Davis was brought in a lot for. Like, he wasn't a coverage linebacker. He isn't a blitzer. He's a run stuffer, a big tackler. And so led the team in tackles, as you mentioned. Lions defense looks at least a little more stout in terms of defending the run at this point. And so, yeah, I think people were pretty excited about Jared Davis too, just not quite as high on the Kenny Golladay hype train, which was just out of control.
Sure. But I think, I mean, at least in the case of Kenny Golladay, there was the injuries that kind of took him out of our radar. Jared Davis didn't have that luxury, and we saw him. We saw him kind of go downhill through the season though.
Sure.
So I think this was a nice little kind of catch. I think we'll talk more about Jared Davis in the coming weeks about, you know, what to expect out of rookies. And I think how much this first game of the season raised the bar for him that he was kept to for the year. But I think this is a really good start to our series. Did you guys like this little memory lane thing?
I did. And I want to throw in one last thing, too, is that Miles Killebrew had essentially the game sealing pick six. And I think this was about the last time we ever heard of Miles Killebrew again.
I remember that entire year or two, people asking us, hashtag ask POD mailbag coming up, but asking us, is it safe now to buy a Miles Killebrew jersey? And I think we led a lot of people astray, Jeremy.
I never suggest buying jerseys based on my own history.
Tell me about it. The one last thing that if I can get into is that Prater had a 58 yard field goal, and this was the one that went through and it hit the camera guy in the junk.
That's a great way to end this segment. Thank you for that. Our Wayback Machine has brought us back to 2018. Stick around. The POD mailbag is coming up next. Mail time, hashtag ask POD. As always, get them in here anytime. We will read them as long as y'all got the hashtags. Sometimes y'all don't remember them. Sometimes I give people a pass if it's in the threads on Twitter, but where we look for them. Jeremy, we have reviews.
We have review. One from last week, and I thought we were going to get a whole bunch from last week, but we ended up only getting one, at least that wrote a review. Matt Gibb gave us 5 stars. He says, fantastic Lions podcast. I want to thank you guys for the work you did on the Patricia sexual assault story. Megan was very insightful, and it is a story we need to know. Also, I'm always going to remember Jeremy as the other guy. The list casts are always entertaining, and overall you do a great job of mixing in Lions talk with other fun topics. Also, we need more wrestling talk. Keep up the good work, and Jeremy needs to rejoin Twitter. Couple things I want to address really quick. I appreciate the nice words about last week's episode. We know it was a tough topic for a lot of people to hear. We know a lot of people didn't agree with some of the things we said, but I hope you can respect all of our opinions on the topic.
I can take people respecting us. I don't like people who are like nitpicking every word and then assuming that, you know, in an off the cuff podcast that this, right, that a single sentence someone utters implies that we have some sort of inherent bias.
Right. Like, and there's a lot of emotions involved in the story. Sometimes we get caught up in them as well. It wasn't something that we wanted to talk about, but we thought was necessary to talk about. So thanks for sticking with us, even if you didn't like that episode. But yeah, we're moving on. Appreciate all the words, both kind and negative. But
yeah,
if appreciate those comes that up kept emotions out of it.
If something comes up in the story, we will probably have to cover it because that's what we have to do. It's news. I know that some of y'all don't think it's news. It's news. Anyway, let's while we're on the topic of something else he mentioned there, David, we do have a question in the mailbag, and I've been teasing this since the start of the podcast. David at N795UA asking us, why did Jeremy quit Twitter? So for those not in the know, Jeremy did deactivate at Detroit on Lion only for a little bit of time. I think he's going to come back before he loses his account in that 30-day window.
Yeah,
Go on, explain yourself.
I mean, it's been a long time coming. Ever since really the beginning of the year, I've just not enjoyed Twitter as much as I used to. It's become basically Facebook without the adults. Or grandparents, I should say, I guess.
I've seen some grandparents on Twitter, but they're even worse
than grandparents. Well, yeah, I think we pointed out one last week who just likes to celebrate holidays. but it's no longer a fun society to me anymore. It's just arguing every day. And it's become so formulaic almost to me where it's just like, we're all pouring over the same meme. This week is perfect. Like, I was away from Twitter outside of the Pride of Detroit account, and you guys were throwing all the quote unquote fun stuff in our Slack room. But here's what I missed. People arguing over gun control again, a woman shitting in a Tim Hortons, and people arguing over sound clip.
Yeah,
does that sound like a lot of fun to me? That does not sound fun to me. I missed this week.
Jeremy, I just need to know if you hear Yanny or Laurel. Just fucking tell me if you hear Yanny or Laurel.
I don't care. This is stupid. Why are we arguing? Let's talk about mozzarella sticks instead.
The best thing that came out of the Yanny and Laurel thing was that I have a student in class whose name is Laurel, and another student had like mentioned to her she goes, hey, we have a substitute next hour. And I said, hey, this is what you need to do. When the sub says your name, you need to say it's actually pronounced Yanny.
There you go. Yeah, no, but as an audio person, I just found the Yanni Laurel thing fascinating. That's me.
I guess it's to me, it was just another thing for people to argue about. And I'm not a person that really likes to argue in general. I like to just kind of listen. And Twitter is not a place to listen. Yo, it's a place to argue and yell at each other. No, I'll be back at the end of the month, but I just needed a break. And Matt Patricia stuff definitely didn't help, but it wasn't the sole reason.
Okay, fair enough. No, I've been trying to be more positive on Twitter. And part of that's because I'm also looking for a job, too. But
also, we kind of buried the best thing that was on Twitter. That brainstorm or green needle thing. Continues to blow my mind.
And I can hear you playing it in the background because I hear the rumbling of the. Oh no, that's a motorbike in the back.
Yeah, that's coming from me. Sorry, I'm gonna mute myself.
Oh no, it's fine. It's fine. I'm usually the one worried about background sound. Speaking of Twitter, and getting on to another question here, we have: of all the members of the royal wedding, who would you choose to become your franchise quarterback?
This person is trolling because I specifically said in the tweet and in the post, we're not answering questions about the royal wedding. Fair I don't know enough. A damn thing about it.
I don't know anything about it. I didn't follow it. But at the same time, like, don't. And Jeremy talked about a woman pooping in Tim Hortons. But like, don't poop on other people who want to watch it, enjoy it, because I saw this really good point made on Twitter with this guy saying, like, I actively watch day three of the NFL draft. So like, I have no room in you know, crapping on other people who want to spend their time watching the royal wedding. And I'm like, fair point.
I'd rather watch the Royal Rumble, but you know, I think I'm right there with you.
Yes.
Again, this is a more positive me. This isn't me spouting the Marxist that the monarchy is da 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 da. Next question here from JJ2672. What is it with all these questions coming from people with numbers in their names? Werner's or Barks root beer?
I never got into Werner's. I don't know. Ginger ale in general is not my jam.
I like ginger ale. I like ginger beer. I just don't like Werner's. Like, I don't mind getting it every now and then, but if you're asking me which of like the mainstay ginger ales I like best, I still think it's not even Canada Dry, it's Seagram's. I think Seagram's has probably the best ginger ale. Werner's is just such a weird, different thing because it's like, it's dark. It's like trying to be a ginger beer almost, but just not spicy enough to be a ginger beer.
This is how you answer this question for me, at least. Would you prefer a Boston cooler or a root beer float? And I'm a root beer float kind of guy, so.
Fair enough. I mean, which one is Barks again? I always get, see, I like root beer. I think I like mugs better, but
Barks is the Coke product. Mug is the Pepsi product.
Barks has bite. That's how you remember. It's the one with bite.
Really? I that's the thing. Like, I always thought Barks felt kind of watered down, but
that's just their slogan.
Of the two though, I think I'm going to lean Werner's over Barks. If those are the only two options, I think I'll take Werner's.
I'll lean whichever direction leads me to not drink soda because it's gross.
You're gross.
Okay, Cali boy.
Funny enough, because the new Cali boy here myself is just drinking Coke like a fish. Let's see here. Ryan Collins at Shafty Von Hack. What is the proper way to eat a chicken wing?
Go ahead.
This is another thing. This is another thing that happened on Twitter. Oh man. But yeah, no, like, I don't care if you eat it with one hand or two hands. Like, I'm not going to police how you eat a chicken wing. You don't have to eat it with one hand to try to impress somebody by your ability to clean a bone. Like, what? No, I don't care. But flats are better than drums. It's not even close.
The answer is very carefully.
Damn it. I blew it.
We get some Lions questions in here, I promise, but I need one more non-Lions question before we do this. Mike Holman, which deodorant style do you prefer, stick, spray, or gel? And I'm going to make Jeremy goodness. Go first. I'm going to make Jeremy go first because he told me something before the podcast when we were pre-screening these that just grossed me the hell out. So go ahead, Jeremy. No. Share with Ryan and the universe what you told me.
I do not regularly wear deodorant, and I'm not ashamed of that at all. I think in general, as a culture, we way, 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 way over sanitize. You shower every day, you're fine. I don't have a natural musk that comes off me. I don't need to cover up my own man smell, which, by the way, has been known scientifically to be attractive to the other's gender, if that's what you're into. I do have deodorant in case of emergency, in case maybe I'm having a very lazy day and then suddenly I need to go out and not smell really bad. But in general, I smell fine without it. I don't need it. You, Brian, you guys can stick iron under your armpits all day if you want, but I'm not doing it.
Ryan, please shake some sense into him, because I couldn't.
If you're using a spray deodorant, you're a middle schooler.
Yeah, like, I think the only answer here is stick, right?
It's like, only stick. Like, yeah. What gel is? Gel, it just, like, you want to put, like, a bunch of goop wash underneath your arm?
No, that's body wash in the shower. That's where you use the gel. Like, would you still need the stick even if you use body wash? No matter what, yeah, what kind of fucking animal Jeremy is.
I get Jeremy. Like, there's more than one Jeremy out in the world. I know quite a few people who don't use deodorant. I know some friends who like, male deodorants don't work for them, so they use, like, female deodorants. It's the only way that they can stay dry. It's, man, deodorant's a wild topic. We haven't. Wow.
Look, my opinion, though, is, like, and this is what I was trying to tell Jeremy, like, even if you smell fine without deodorant, like, it's nice to have that extra, kind of like cologne, except I can't afford cologne.
So I don't do cologne either. I don't like,
man, just get yourself smells. Just get yourself some goddamn Old Spice and just
I have Old Spice. It's fine.
Well, use the Old Spice.
I only use it when I need it. I usually don't need it.
This is why Nora left you.
Jesus.
That's an old podcast joke.
For reference, he's not being old turn. He's joking because there was never a Nora.
No, just, well, there was, just, but there wasn't.
Just so people don't think Chris is being more of an asshole than usual.
No, I'm more than the thing. I'm an asshole. I think that's my character now. I guess I'm the asshole.
Me, oh my.
Let's see here. Pat Burr WA, what's more intimidating, Aishon's stern countenance or the glowering disapproval of the British royal family? Once again, back to the wedding top talk, but.
Well, I don't have anything to add to that.
All right. Well, that was my chance to try to get back to the Lions. So let's take this next one from Tom Foolery 27. Why isn't there a reliable minor league system set up for the NFL? And Tom, Mr. Foolery, you stepped into my favorite armchair topic when it comes to talking about the state of American football, is the fact that there is no farm system, and there hasn't been since NFL Europe folded up. And I'm going to let anyone else who wants to jump in on why can go ahead, because I'm really opinionated on this.
I don't really know the why, other than the NFL just wants to dominate everything and doesn't want to see the spotlight from anyone at any point in the offseason. They want to own the offseason, too, with the draft, with OTAs, with whatever, free agency. So they don't want to give up the spotlight, I think, is probably the biggest reason to it.
Do you still think that's true? Because, I mean, granted, I don't watch a lot of NFL Network. I watch SportsCenter, but I have noticed, like, this offseason in particular has been very threadbare of NFL trying to get back in the news. It might just be that we're in playoffs, but that would mean that they've just seeded that the NBA playoffs are just going to dominate this particular time of year.
I don't know. I mean, they try to create news, like, they got, I think they're just struggling to do it, because, you know, they have the top 100 players list going on right now in NFL Network. That's barely created any sort of buzz whatsoever from what I've seen. It used to be like, oh, this is really, really exciting. But I think people have just kind of grown tired of shit like that. Like, they're tired of lists. They're tired of, especially that list, which is so flawed fundamentally, that it's hard right now to create any sort of news. There's nothing going on.
Would you guys watch a minor league football system at all?
I think so.
Like let's say you're living in a small city, like, actually even a mid-sized city, like, let's say that the NFL decides to set up some, like, I'm using like a lot too much, sorry, a minor league farm system in Des Moines, Iowa, and you're living in Des Moines. Would you go see it? Or would you stay at home and watch the Packers?
Well, that's also the problem is when if you're putting it in the off season, then absolutely I'd watch it. If you're putting it on Sundays or even Saturdays during the season, probably not.
What if it's so okay? What if instead of if it's going to be fall football, let's just take let's do what fans want: kill Thursday night football, but that Thursday night becomes the minor league night. Would that work?
I think I'd be in. I don't know. It would. I don't know. It depends on a bunch of factors. If the level of play is at least okay, adequate, then sure. Yeah, I think I would watch. Favorite word.
Here's the thing, and this is I think the football does need a farm system because I've pointed out this before. This is kind of it's kind of atrocious that we have these rosters which must be filled up to 90 men in the preseason and the training camp, and that must then be whittled down by nearly 50% down to not quite 50%, but close enough to 53 men. And then there's nowhere for those guys who get cut to go except to wait around until there's some midseason cut. There's nowhere for those guys to go, nowhere for them to keep practicing, not even like live practice or anything, like getting hit with pads on. There's not even a place like you're expected to work out on your own time and keep yourself in shape on your own time rather than any kind of organized activity, which would keep you ready to go. And we've seen with NFL Europe, some of the NFL Europe veterans who've come back and said, look, I wasn't ready coming out of college. And NFL Europe or, you know, arena football helped get me ready to come back for that second go round. And it ends up that they become pretty well mainstays. If you're a fan, you should be interested in the fact that there is no farm system in this league, that has a massive attrition rate to its active players on a game day that needs good bodies. Look at this. It's not even about quarterbacks anymore. Every time your first option at a position goes down injured, look at that talent drop off now. And that's because no one's really caring about trying to make sure that these guys get meaningful reps on the second or third teams. And yeah, someone even in the comments brought up the fact that Arena Football League is now only down to 4 teams. There's several other arena leagues, but right now the arena scene's kind of in turmoil and no one's really picked up the scepter there. But arena football is not, you know, I like arena football. It's not conducive most of the time to a full field football.
Yeah, I don't like arena football at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'm more talking about the skills for the guys, right? Because that's the thing. Like, you can entertain some people locally when it comes to a minor league baseball team, but the real point of those minor league teams in Des Moines or Toledo or Louisville is to get guys still practicing baseball every day so that when they do get a call up, that they will be ready to play in the majors. And the NFL just doesn't have that right now. And I get why they don't have it because it's very expensive to run football. And I think any farm system would be operating at a pretty significant net loss, but I think the NFL makes enough money that they could feasibly run a few farm system teams. And I think you just need it at this point. You need it not just for the growth of the game too, but just in general for the health of your sport. Because we can write so many articles about how coaches are scared because quarterbacks are coming out of college, not ready for the NFL. But there is a lot more than just the quarterbacks that are struggling with that. And these injuries, like we've seen it, Jeremy. We've seen so many years where an injury-decimated team has their entire season decided because someone gets hurt. And that's just not, I think some fans have eventually or will eventually check out because of that. Because that kind of sucks that's going to just be complete luck, that your season success is going to be completely predicated on how your guys stay healthy, which isn't a skill to maintain, but a full roll of luck right there. And you have no way to prepare guys in the second or third team to come up.
Yeah, it's tricky too, just because of like the coaching carousel. Like, you're coaching up these guys in your farm leagues to learn one sort of system, and then the next year you have to throw it all away, and suddenly you have to get a whole new cast of now 90 different people that you're going to learn a whole new system. So there are intricacies that make it tougher than, say, like a baseball team where you just need someone who hits well or someone who pitches well. But it's still feasible, and there still should be some sort of
thing in place. Maybe Ryan can talk to this, but guys in the American Hockey League and guys in the G League for the NBA, they have to learn systems, and, you know, still not the same as NFL, but still. Oh, yeah. Okay, here we go. I was just saying, you know, G League for NBA or American Hockey League, those guys have to learn some systems.
Yeah, AHL is especially. I mean, I go to quite a few Griffins games, but the AHL is just it's a very weird league. You have these players who are skilled, but they're learning dump and chase hockey. And you can tell how many of them struggle with that. Like it's a huge learning curve.
Yeah. All right. One more question here, and then we will get on out of here. John Whitaker, who is your early favorite for the name bracket?
Ooh, that's a great question. I think I'm going to get the name bracket started either next month, probably sometime in June. So I do have to start thinking about this. Do you guys have anyone that sticks out to you as a front runner? I don't want to necessarily give away anything, but
Kerryon Johnson is a great name. Just the last name, I think, is going to hold him back.
For sure.
Yeah. Like if I could, I think I've said this before, but if I could just get his first name on a jersey, I would be happy. As it is, the fact that it's just going to be Johnson on the back kind of kills my hopes to have a jersey.
Mm-hmm. And I guess it's kind of like the opposite for Ragnow, like his first name, Frank. But Frank is kind of like it's a throwback, like kind of, it has some appeal in terms of like a throwback name, like Frank.
Yeah. I really like Deshaun Hand.
That's probably a good one.
It's on the back of a jersey is just gonna look great.
I'll throw you another Sean that I think people may have forgotten that the Lions picked up this offseason, and I think this is a Final Four contender for sure. And that's Rayshon Pringle.
Oh wow. Yeah,
that's right.
Oh wow.
That's gonna be tough.
Yeah. Wow. Thank you for listening to the Pride Detroit PODcast. We are on iTunes and Stitcher. Our main theme was produced by Ryan Shepherd. You can find him on Twitter and on SoundCloud at I am Brian Shepherd. IamBrianSheppard. Thanks a lot to him. Check out his stuff. He's been great. He gave us Victory Monday, so go check him out. That's I am Brian Shepherd. And thank you for everyone who keeps listening and makes us one of the greatest Lions podcasts possible. Y'all are awesome. See you, Starside.